Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Let's go! First place, Atlanta Falcons.
You heard the man.
Dude,
you heard the man.
How about it? This is the morning shift. I am he, and he is Squidbilly. He is the All-American national champion, former Atlanta Falcon. Don't ask him what the P in the Michael P. Johnson stands for.
Stands for Penix.
It does not. That's
yes,
what
it
Penix
does.
Stands for.
Yes, it
Yours
does.
Yours stands for something else. I mean,
it stands for place,
and
as in first place.
We have big Penix energy this AM because our Falcons are now, they took the losing streak, Michael, and they turned it into a two-game winning streak.
Yes.
And we need to turn it into a 4-5-6-7-8-game winning streak.
Yeah, well, now do we get to say that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers peed down their leg? Is that what it is? Now we get to say they peed down their leg.
Yeah, costly turnovers by Baker. I heard a lot of love. Look, dude. I'm a Baker Mayfield fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be, to be completely honest with you.
But all the people that wanted to get in on my Twitters and my DMs and tell me how great he is, and he is a good player, but they love him. Well, they have to. The other thing you have to live with him is the turnovers. And what we didn't have to live with yesterday from our quarterback, our rookie, Michael Penix Jr., was turnovers. Because the one turnover in the game that the Falcons committed is an asterisk, and we'll get to that later because it had nothing to do with him.
No, it didn't. And honestly, the biggest turnover yesterday in the Cowboys-Bucks game had nothing to do with Baker Mayfield.
Well,
Rashad White and Deron Bland came together for that one.
I don't know if I completely agree. Because I think sometimes that's one of those borderline plays where sometimes it's better to go down because it was a risky play by Baker as he's in the grasp of a defensive lineman.
That's probably fair, but he didn't fumble the ball.
He didn't, but maybe just hold on to it and live to fight another day completely.
Obviously, a lot of things to get into, man. Crazy, crazy weekend. We'll get into the college football playoff coming up at 6:40, but it's a Falcons victory Monday, and not only is it a victory Monday for the Falcons, we had all eyes peeled, and you almost went two for two. We had all eyes peeled on the Washington Commanders-Philadelphia Eagles game yesterday, and then obviously last night, Cowboys taking on the Buccaneers in Sunday Night Football. They come up just short in that one, which means, like we've been saying, the Atlanta Falcons now at the top of the NFC South, where we feel like they belong, and they do it in grand fashion with a rookie starting quarterback.
That's why, real quick, before we get to the game, that's why one of the things that I kept coming back to when we were in the bye, before the losing streak really hit two more games, was you've done a lot of good work in the first half of the season. That doesn't just go away, okay? If you can handle business, that won't go away. You need to beat the There's even a chance you go 1-1 over the next two and still are fine, okay? But the reality is you need to go 2-0. That's what that way there's nothing comes into question. Not to mention you have a 10-7 record. It's the first winning season you would have since that's what you would have if you went 2-0. It would be the first winning season since 2017. You've won 8 games for the first time since 2017.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which was when you won 10 last time.
Yeah, you did. And just to update you guys on kind of where the playoff picture is, before we start to get to the Falcons game, the Lions are locked in. The Eagles right there at the 2 right now. The Vikings are locked into a playoff berth, but they're at the 5 seed. So that could be a team that, if you're able to win the South, would be on the road, possibly coming down here. The Rams, the Falcons, Packers, and Commanders all still kind of right there in the hunt and should be. If the, you know, if the playoffs started today, they'd be in. Falcons' current playoff probability sitting at 55%. And then you go to on the bubble right now in the NFC. That is the Buccaneers, whose probability sits at 51%, and the Seahawks, who sit at 14%, which are the currently in ninth place in the NFC. So, you know, not to split hairs, and here's the message moving forward. Just win, baby. Just go out and win. Go out and win your game this weekend. You got flexed into Sunday Night Football against the Commanders. You know, we'll get into that game later, but I think we should start, Bo, and we got, you know, a few minutes left in this segment. What were your thoughts on Michael Penix yesterday? What did you see different? What did you think of the poise, the debut, everything that kind of comes with Michael Penix making his first start?
Well, the difference was, if you didn't see the difference, you're numb because it slapped. The difference
you're
was
blind.
Slapped in your face in the first play of the game. Zach Robinson walked out,
dude.
And he backhand slapped part of the fan base who
dude.
Talks about him as a play caller and his offense, because he goes, "You want a bootleg? I'll give you a bootleg." And I know you probably couldn't stand up in the press box.
I couldn't.
Because they run a boot on the first play, and honestly, it was a drop by Ray-Ray, and even Ray-Ray will tell you that. And I think the one thing I'll say real quick is that there were a few drops early on, and I think some of that, I don't think it had anything to do with spin. I think it was velocity.
I think it was too.
I think the ball was getting on the guys quicker than they thought.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about Kirk's velocity. You know, coming out of his hand, he had that game a couple weeks ago, under 33 miles an hour the whole game. I'm with you. You ran the boot on the first play. Now, I said to you and Arch on Friday, I told you, I said, if there's not a boot in the first three plays, Bo might have to hold me back from the coach's booth. And sure enough, there was one on the very first play of the game. Michael Penix throws a dart. Ray-Ray probably drops it. It was decent coverage coming in, you know, on his back. But side note, I found it very interesting that Ray-Ray was the one that ran the one-man comeback route on the bootleg. I thought, okay, well, that's kind of cool. But nonetheless, man, just a different look. And I was excited right off the hook when you run that bootleg.
I mean, when you talk about your receivers, Ray-Ray and Darnell are neck and neck for the second leading receiver on the – well, them and those two guys, along with Bijan Robinson, are neck and neck for who's second on the team in receptions. But here's the thing. I looked at him, and there was a calm in the pocket, and overall calm about him, but I felt like he had a calming effect just back in the pocket when during a play. Never really felt like he panicked. Kirk Cousins is always kind of a fidgety, nervous kind of guy in the pocket.
He's anxious. He's got some anxiousness.
And I think a lot of that is because he's got an internal clock knowing that he can't move.
Right.
He knows that he has only so long to get that ball out, and then it becomes a hot potato situation, you know?
Yeah.
I never saw that from Michael. I thought and you and I were talking about this. I thought we saw route concepts and the route tree, what the receivers were running yesterday was something we haven't seen maybe since first few weeks in the season.
Yeah, no, there was depth to the routes. There were levels to the routes. There was actually a couple times that I thought maybe there was miscommunication. I think on one of the crossing routes on a big third down, I thought, you know, you had it looked like Ray-Ray and Darnell were kind of in the same spot. But you had levels to it, man. You're hitting crossing routes. You're hitting we'll talk about Chris Blair coming up in a minute, probably later on in the show. But guys were out there competing, and I love what Michael Penix was doing. He was in command. I thought that the moment didn't look too big for him. You look at him in the huddle. You look at him, you know, calling for the motions from the side. You look at him going through his cadence. Even got a couple guys to jump off sides, which, as a small note, is huge for a rookie quarterback to be able to get into their cadence. I know it's a home game, but you get into your cadence, and if you're able to get guys to jump off sides, that shows me a level of comfortability that you don't see a lot of times out of rookies in those situations.
I know one of the things I was seeing people talk about was, well, it still didn't throw the ball deep. I disagree. That throw to Blair was, what, like 19, 20 yards? That's considered a deep, what, over route?
Yeah.
And but the pass interference, and I
was going to say, I can't remember who the target was on the pass
Darnell.
Interference. Okay, there you go.
And it was – and Arch broke this down, so if you don't think I know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm about to regurgitate what Dave Archer says, so you know it's true. He was just raving about the throw because the throw was to the inside and the DB was on the outside, and so basically the reason there was pass interference, it was and if you go back and look at it, it was dropped in a bucket. The only reason it wasn't caught was because they could have pressed charges on the corner of what he did to Darnell Mooney.
Yeah, he got assaulted.
But to me, it won't show up on the stat sheet, but when you throw a ball to that well and you draw a penalty of a 40-yard variety, that is the quarterback making explosive plays.
Yeah.
That's the offense. That's an explosive for the offense. It doesn't show up in the stat sheet, but in the NFL game, it's exactly what it is.
It's a beautiful thing, man. And we got to head to break. But obviously, when we come back on the other side, look, you might not have noticed it yesterday, but when I saw this one stat on the stat sheet, my eyes almost fell out of my head. And it does have to do with Michael Penix Jr. Make sure you stick with us. It's Mike and Bo here on the Morning Shift. It's Christmas week, man. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. You're in first place. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Tracy in the backfield. Here is Locke looking to throw. Ellis pressures. Intercepted Bates. Locke threw a pick six, and Jesse will cruise for the touchdown.
You know, stats are for losers. But I was really pleased with the defensive effort today. Going out there, scoring a couple touchdowns, being able to get the ball back for our offense, consistently getting off the grass. You know, we get a chance to hit the quarterback nowadays, and, like, we are really playing well as a team. And, like, that's where you want to start peaking right about now. You know, it is what it is, man. I can't be more proud of the team and what they were able to accomplish today.
Well, I don't want to talk about stats too much because we're winners today, my friend. It's a Victory Monday here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Mike and Bo. It's the Morning Shift.
When that intercepts, so, you know, I'm the EP for the network, and I'm also sitting in between Arch and Wes spotting, right? And so how I watch the game, I have to be kind of like a mime when I watch it, right? I can cheer, but I can't.
Oh, you got to be quiet.
I can't verbally cheer.
All right. Okay. I'm following you.
And, like, when Jesse makes the interception, I'm like, hit it!
Are you calling the game for him?
Like, I did.
Calling the game for Wes?
Because, so here's the thing. When there's a fumble, I will yell ball loudly.
Yeah.
Ball. So you probably don't hear it, but Wes will hear it. And so
the same thing.
He'll realize that the ball's, you know, and so it kind of helps him as part of spotting. So I went to do an interception, but I was like, well, I think you can see that one.
Yeah.
What a play.
Might be able to notice.
What a play. They kept doing those short little early, like, they were running a lot of screens, Mike, and wide receivers within the little just like stop routes or whatever. And Jesse, apparently D. Alford, Jesse told us that D. Alford made the call. He saw something.
Yeah.
And he makes the call. And then Jesse just sits there and boom.
It was, and look, you got to give credit to Jimmy Lake. You got to give credit to the entire defense. And I know it's Jesse's pick, but schematically, you knew the ball was coming out. You knew that our defense has developed the ability to get home. I did like you yesterday in the post game. I was like, man, surely we've climbed out of the basement in the NFL in terms of sacks over the last few weeks. We continue to just pile them up. And I think the Bengals were 31st and they got 5 yesterday. And I was like, oh man, didn't get a chance to climb out of that basement spot, but nonetheless, a great defensive effort. And look, I know if you're riding around the car and you're not a Falcons fan or just a skeptical fan, you're sitting there going, the Giants are a bad team. I agree with you. There's no doubt about it. But I think most Falcons fans, and you can speak to this, most Falcons fans would tell you that in the history for the Atlanta Falcons, you've let bad teams beat you multiple times. And so we are going to celebrate this one with vigor and the fact that you landed in first place this morning when you woke up.
Hold on. You can't be mad. You couldn't sit here and call in Tuesday morning and be upset with how they won the game against a what? Bad team.
Yeah.
And then come in here today and say, I ain't impressed.
Yeah.
Because you can't have it both ways. Okay?
Yeah.
If you're gonna be mad about screwing around against the Raiders, then you need to come in and be happy today because you did the exact opposite.
Yeah.
It's okay, guys, to enjoy victories.
Yeah.
If not, you're just miserable people.
I had a little back and forth with Turtle on Twitter like 2 weeks ago, and it was when the Falcons were winning the game, and he's like, this is losing football. And I was like, you know, it might be, But we've been through enough as a fan base that can we just celebrate the small things without having to think while we're winning a game that this is losing football?
Enjoy the ride.
It's the small victories. Speaking of enjoying the ride, I do want to go back to the Jesse Bates interception. Now, if you're like me, I'm sitting in the media suite yesterday watching. I'm sitting in the press box watching the game, and I was honestly, and I don't know if you felt this way, but I thought through the first quarter, the Falcons, pretty much the entire team, weren't playing bad, but they weren't playing with like that home crowd energy, like up, like making hand signals, celebrating tackles. I just didn't think they had that through about the first quarter.
Yeah, it was a sleepy first quarter. It was a sleepy building.
Yes, it was.
It reminded me of the Seattle game to start.
Yes.
Sleepy.
Yep. Which I was disappointed in.
I thought that there. I don't know about you, but whenever I played sports, whatever sport I was playing, I needed something to get me in the game.
Like exactly.
When I played soccer, I was a defender, right? And so whenever the first challenge that I got where somebody brought the ball down and I was up to bat, so to speak, I would be feeling all different emotions.
Yes.
And then that would lock me in.
Yeah. No,
probably for you, the first pass set, right?
Yeah. Well, first run block. I like to run the ball, man. The pass set was like you're on defense anyways on pass set.
But maybe the first time you got challenged,
right,
and you like stood
right.
up.
First
and you
time
won.
You got bull rushed.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. No, so to the point is, yesterday the Falcons are losing the game 3-7. You just heard the Jesse Bates interception. I thought that woke up the building. I thought that woke up the team. Here's what Jesse Bates had to say about what happened.
Yeah, exactly. I just shout out Zach. I mean, honestly, it wasn't all me.
Well, that was not Jesse.
I don't think that was Jesse Bates.
Yeah, like you said, we're showing man-to-man. And, you know, D. Alford, you know, he's continued to grow every single week. And him just being able to get the communication out that we're going to be in zone in that instance. And just getting my drop, doing my 111, and then breaking off the quarterback. Props to D. Alford for getting us in that call. And, you know, shout out to the D-line for getting pressure. I think Caden had pressure again. And, you know, myself, my hands work. So it's something about these red helmets, man, and pick sixes with our defense. So we need to keep wearing our throwback unis.
And in that moment, the Falcons fans that weren't sold fell in love with Jesse Bates because of the red helmets, throwback jerseys.
Oh, I know, dude.
Okay, know. You want to hear some numbers?
Go ahead.
Jesse Bates numbers?
Go ahead. Because I still got to get to my number that blew my mind. But, yes, hit me with some Jesse Bates.
Jesse
stuff.
Bates has 24 career interceptions.
Ooh.
He had 14 when he signed as a Falcon.
Ooh.
In what, four years?
Yeah.
Jesse Bates has, in 32 games as an Atlanta Falcon, he has 10 interceptions. And I believe that, I want to say that if three of those are pick sixes. I know two are.
Yeah. You might be right about that. It's insane to think about for a lot of different reasons, just the sheer volume that you're able to get. But you also add in the fact of how bad this team has struggled to get their hands on footballs back in the secondary. I mean, remember, we finished last year with no cornerbacks having interceptions. Finished last year with not one corner getting an interception last season. So the fact that Jesse Bates has been able to do that in almost two seasons is absolutely insane. Let's go back to Michael Penix for a second, and I want to reset with this before we kind of head to the break in just a couple of minutes. Michael Penix yesterday, obviously doing a lot of good things. You go down the list, team stats for the Atlanta Falcons, the passing yards are there, 18 of 27 for 202. Now, he has the interception. I think we can all agree that Kyle Pitts played a massive role in that interception. If you don't see that
to the defender,
if you don't see that, then you are just wearing the most Kyle Pitts colored glasses I've ever seen. When you look at Michael Penix, though, and everything else going on, I think a lot of people say, oh, Michael Penix was fine. The defense won the game. Bijan Robinson won the game. Can I tell you the one stat that's going to change your mind? How about 8 of 14 on third down? How about 8 of 14 on third down, Bo? 57% on third down. As a team on the season, you've been at 37%. And we've been talking about it, and I mean, and Goforth and I talked about this in the post game yesterday. Since preseason, there was like a preseason game where you were 1 of 13 on third down.
Yeah.
It was abysmal in preseason, and we kept telling ourselves, you know what, it's bad in preseason. Maybe we're just saving things in the playbook. And then if you remember, we hit the ground, I think, in like week one, it was abysmal. abysmal.
It
you
was
were
bad
dead
the first
last.
4 weeks.
You were dead last. You climbed to like 20%, and then you climbed to 26%, and then you climbed to 36%. And that's about where you topped out. Like, you couldn't climb any higher than that. And then you come into this game, and yes, the defense won. Yes, you had the pick sixes. Yes, the you know, the guys continue to get home and get sacks. Bijan was great. He's been great. But to me, the biggest thing that sticks out in terms of this game and things that are different, 8 of 14 on third down, you were 6 of 7, I think, in short yardage situations. And I think the seventh one was actually the Drew Dahlman holding call, which was a little bit tic-tac. You were excellent in situations that you have not been excellent in. Go down to the red zone, which you've been very bad at. If you put the Kyle Pitts interception to bed, then you're even a lot better in that category. All right, the penalties, we've talked about it, 3 for 30. The New York Giants had 10 for 85. So, look, man, there's just a lot of different ways to look at it. And Penix played exactly the way that I think most Falcons fans wanted Penix. He didn't need to make it rain. He didn't need to throw 5 touchdown passes. He handed the ball off to Bijan. You ran the boots. You ran the play actions. Because of what he's able to do with his mobility, he layered the defense. The defense had to get structured deep on the back end, step up with the linebackers, and left some of those deep crossing routes.
Well, you've already showed Washington so much that they now have to change. Like, you showed so much more that they cannot. It became an easy map to read for us. Defensively, if you're the opposing defense, you knew what you're going to get. I think you've showed a lot more to Dan Quinn, and he's got to prepare for more. So they're going to be looking for more, which is a good thing, I think, because they just can't hone in. You know, you talk about all the numbers, but John Robinson had another 90-something plus day, 100-yard game, had 103 total all-purpose yards yesterday. You know, he's now almost got 1,200 yards. He's got 10 touchdowns. I think it was Grady Smunk tweeted us yesterday and was like, this isn't brain surgery. Why does Bijan now have 5 catches already? You got a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Grady's my guy. I don't know what we're talking about.
I tweeted him back and I said, I have no issues with any of the play calling because with the way defenses are playing you right now, the Giants still brought a boatload of A-gap blitzes.
It's the first third down of the game, it was double A-gap mug. They were doing the same things they tried to do to Kirk.
And Bijan made an amazing block where he chips the linebacker, and then the defensive lineman is coming on a stunt, and he was able to get in and get him.
Yeah,
where
took some pressure off him.
Yeah, and Penix is able to get to his second read, which is Drake coming across the middle, and he hits him. I mean, dude.
Yeah.
That was like a perfect catch and throw.
Yeah. It's a Falcons victory Monday here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Mike and Bo on the morning shift. When we come back, we'll talk a little more Atlanta Falcons. We'll also hit some college football playoff. 8 teams played in the college football playoff this weekend. One of them was clearly the best to me. We'll talk about that on the other side. Stick with us at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, man. It's just the preparation, the work that I put in each and every day. You know, just always staying ready for the moment. I'm blessed to come out with a win today. You know, the defense played a heck of a game. You know, 2 touchdowns on the defense side of the ball. And then the offensive line doing a wonderful job protecting me so I can get the ball to the playmakers. So, man, it's a blessing. So.
Let me tell you what that man is trying to say to you. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. You know what I mean? That's Michael Penix Jr. after the Falcons' big dub yesterday that he didn't know it at that point, but slides them into first place after the Buccaneers lost to the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football.
I just retweeted Brian Baldinger is already doing his breakdowns. And he just did a breakdown of Penix.
Okay.
And I thought he went through, and obviously, I mean, I talked to Arch about what we see during the game and after the game. I have some moments too, and one of the things I thought Baldy did a good job was breaking down Penix going through his progressions. Penix his patience. There was one where he wanted to go to Darnell, and I think it was in the second half, and he waits, and then he comes back to Kyle. And Kyle actually caught it, and it was great. And
That was Kyle's catch.
But the three throws that stood out to me the most is the Drake first down on the first third down of the game.
Yes.
Where he hits him. He's looking. It's his second progression. Comes
through a seed.
Yeah. The second throw was, and it was after the touchdown to that the Giants had. The very first play after that, he throws a rope to the sideline to some kind of like bench route to Darnell.
Yeah.
And it was timing. But the one that my favorite throw was the little wheel route in the red area to Bijan, because it was such a quick decision and release, and the ball was thrown. I mean, Bijan barely had time to get his head around, and it hit him right in the breadbasket.
He definitely did. And you know what else I noticed about that play? You and I have talked about it till we were blue in the face, and one of the things that I said was the undoing of Kirk Cousins throughout the last few weeks was what? The double-A gap mug, walking everybody up to the line of scrimmage, bringing a bunch of people in Kirk's face. He can't move. Even when he does get the ball out, it's getting batted down, and you don't trust him in play action. And we don't run a gap. We don't run any gap schemes offensively, so you don't have that. Usually when you have everybody at the line of scrimmage, you say, oh, we'll run a gap scheme. Everybody will block down. We'll have a kickout block. It's not what we do either. On that play you're talking about, the wheel route, the double-A gap mug. Now, they ended up bailing, but I thought it was great because that's what Michael Penix is supposed to do. How many times have you and I talked about it? They're taking away Bijan in the flat.
Yeah.
Because they're walking up linebackers in the A-gap. Michael Penix says, no, thank you. I'll get it out fast enough. I will get this ball out fast enough where y'all can't get to me. Now, like I said, they end up dropping back into coverage, but he basically showed that, hey, I'm not scared of the double-A-gap mug. I'm not scared of y'all blitzing up the middle, and I'm not scared of Bijan's getting out in the flat. I'll get the ball out quickly, or I'll make somebody move. All right, so we're going to continue to talk about the Falcons today. It is a Falcons Victory Monday, but for right now, man, let's talk a little of this college football. Let me give you all four scores from this past weekend really quick, Bo, and then I got a question. You got Clemson against Texas, Clemson 24, Texas 38, Tennessee 17, Ohio State 42, SMU 10, Penn State 38, Indiana 17, Notre Dame 27. Which of these four games was the best game, Bo? Which one was the best game to watch on television?
Hands down, Clemson and Texas.
You think so?
Because
there was a sliver of time where you felt like they might get it.
Well, but they stormed back. I thought Cade Klubnik played pretty well. They stormed back. I didn't know. And James over at Twin, I was at Twin Peaks for my appearance on Saturday. Shout out a couple of guys, including Edder, who came by and hung out with me for a few. But I'm talking with James, who's kind of the owner operator, managing partner of a lot of these Twin Peaks, and he was telling me that I didn't even know this, that Quinn Ewers and Cade Klubnik apparently went at it in high school.
No kidding.
As far they had a game, and I think Klubnik beat
a couple
Ewers.
Texas guys.
Yeah. But I thought that game was the most in doubt late. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. There was a sliver of time where you were like, this might just happen. All chalk throughout the weekend. Look, man, the college football playoff has had better days. Now, look, I'm a Bama guy. I'm not going to sit here, though, and try to tell you they picked the wrong teams. I don't think they did.
Can I say this?
Sure.
They didn't. I have no problem with the teams. I have a problem with the amount of teams. And I always had a problem with the amount of teams. I said this from there. The average score, average margin of victory in all the years of the 4-team playoff was 15.6 in the semis.
Yeah.
None of that changed.
Yeah.
Got worse.
Yeah, it got worse. I've been around long enough to remember Bama playing Michigan State. There's been blowouts. There's been blowouts since you went to the 4-team playoff. I mean, Georgia TCU was the worst game I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen a worse game to watch on television. That was the national title game. So when you look at it from that perspective, I get it. There's a lot of people that are having hindsight that are looking back and saying, hey, you picked the wrong teams. This team didn't deserve to be on the field. This team did. There's nothing, though, that tells me that Miami, Bama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, that there was not a chance that any of them would get blown out, because all of them individually at times this year have been blown out in football games against good opponents. It's one of those things.
Well,
so I'm not going to sit here and try to hindsight you. I know that's been one of the popular things this weekend. Was it great football? Absolutely not. I was not glued to any of these games.
Well,
on the weekend.
Tennessee suddenly not deserving?
Yeah.
Because everyone told me how deserving they were until they went to Ohio State and got, just I don't even know
they
what you
throttled.
Would call that.
They got throttled.
Now the defense, after it became 21-0, they get it to 21-10. The defense kind of held their water for a little bit, but Ohio State was utterly dominant.
Yes, they were,
and that's the best Ohio State I've seen in years.
That's and that goes back to my point. I said this about the T's headed to break. There was one team to me was above all else, it was Ohio State. You could make the – you look, if you're a Notre Dame fan, I apologize. If you're a Penn State fan, the Fighting Mike Contis, I am sorry. All right, the best team this weekend, not saying in the college football playoff, the best team that played this weekend was Ohio State, which made it even more head-scratching to me that just a couple of weeks ago you lost to a bad Michigan
so
team.
So who's the second? Who was the second best team? Because I think you can make an argument for Penn State.
You can make an argument for Penn State.
They were pretty dominant.
I don't know that – see, I thought Texas at times looked really good as well. They made some mistakes. Arch Manning, I think he adds something to that offense. They made some mistakes, but I think Clemson – look,
they played with their food too much.
Kicked it around.
Yeah.
Kicked it around a little bit.
I can't say the same. And Notre Dame even did a little bit as well. I thought Penn State and Ohio State had the best performances, because at no point with those games were pretty much not in doubt.
I don't know, but here's why I have trouble saying the Penn State thing. It reminds me of the old Simpsons clip when the kid's like, he's dead already. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the SMU had absolutely no answer, and Penn State never had to alter from their game plan. It was just like, you have nothing you can do to us, and we're just going to keep clubbing you in the backfield.
But isn't that like,
well, I think it's worth showing a little bit, because I think when you look at Tennessee, Ohio State, the reason I'm so impressed with Ohio State is because Tennessee does do a couple of things well. I mean, they obviously are a very good running team, but Nico Iamaleava, it's not like he can't throw the ball. It's not like they don't play well defensively. You know what I mean? All these things you expected Tennessee to show, Ohio State shut them down in every single facet. What you saw from Penn State, in my opinion, was SMU saying, oh, we're going to try to run around in the backfield a little bit with our quarterback, use our dual threat. Penn State was like, no thanks. Absolutely shut it down from top to bottom. Never stood a chance.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And that's not a bad SMU team, guys. Like,
no.
What they do is they've gotten down early in games and they fought back. The turn of the game is where Kevin Jennings, it's fourth down in the red area. You could have ran for 5 yards when you needed 1.5, and instead you make a bad throw to the tight end. He gets knocked away, and then Penn State just locked him down.
Real quick, we've got 30 seconds. You look at the matchups coming up in this next round: Texas against Arizona State in the Peach Bowl right here down the street, Ohio State against Oregon in the Rose Bowl, Penn State against Boise in the Fiesta, and then obviously Notre Dame against Georgia. Now, Georgia opened as a favorite in that. Last I checked, they were actually a dog by a half point or a point after those lines opened this weekend. So that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Let me reset this, but I'm seeing it as they're a 1.5 point favorite.
Yes, they opened as a 1.5 point favorite, and it bounced around a little bit.
ESPN still got it as that.
Okay. All right.
Maybe that has changed.
Maybe it rebounded.
No, you're right. It opened as Notre Dame was a favorite.
Okay. All right.
And now they're a point and a half underdog.
Any of those four that you, above all else, you got to see in this
weekend? Well, I think Ohio State Oregon was a classic the first time in Eugene. I don't know way Ohio State played, if that'll change. But I'm going to tell you something. The media has already started their motivation for Kirby.
Yeah.
It's just idiocracy.
Our buddy Emory Hunt.
Emory, I don't know what size. You text Emory Dylon, and I want to know what size his shoe is, because he stuck both of those things right in his mouth, and Kirby might make him eat them.
We'll see. We are definitely going to see. Look, it's Falcons Victory Monday. Hey, you're in first place. Merry Christmas. We got more Falcons talk coming up on the other side of the break. It's the Morning Shift. Mike, Squid, Dylon, stick with us at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.